Remember the good old days before Microsoft Word had autosave? You'd type up some important document and then your computer would freeze and you'd lose hours of work just because you forgot to hit save? Well, that's what it's like going online without ExpressVPN. Every time you're connected to an unencrypted network, whether it's in an airport, a hotel, a cafe, or anywhere, your online data is not secure. Any person on that same network who knows what they're doing can gain access to your personal data. Bank logins, credit card details, passwords, all the stuff you don't want people seeing. Unfortunately, hacking has become much easier than it used to be. People don't even have to be exceptionally skilled to do it, and there's a lot of money to be made by selling your information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. It's incredibly easy to use. Once the app is running, you literally click one button to get protected. And it works on your phone, laptop, tablet, and more, so you can stay protected on the go. I've been using ExpressVPN for a little while now, and I can rest easy knowing my info is safe and secure. I've heard horror stories of people who've been hacked, and it sounds like a massive pain to try to get any resolution in the aftermath, so I am not interested in finding out what that process is like. Secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/film. That's expressvpn.com/film. And you can get an extra 3 months free. expressvpn.com/film.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Wednesday, June 26th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about a little bit about HBO and Warner Brothers Discovery for a second, but mostly we're going to gather around the virtual water cooler and talk about what we've been up to. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film staff writer and box office analyst, Ryan Scott.
Hey, everyone. How's it going?
Ryan, right up here at the top of the show, I would like to issue a correction. My loving wife, Amy, supports me in everything I do, and she also never misses an opportunity to dunk on me whenever possible. She's the best. So anyway, she is 8 months behind when it comes to listening to this podcast. And she told me, she told me that in an episode from last October, I incorrectly used the word emulating when I meant to say emanating. So I would like to apologize to our listeners and just issue a correction, just clarify, you know, get things out right here at the top of the show. So thank you for that correction. If anybody else has any corrections or anything, feel free to email them in to us. I'll give you the email address at the end of the show. But I just wanted to address that, you know, really.
So let me be crystal. Let me be crystal clear here. Your loving wife, Amy, is 8 months behind and she intends to catch up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. She's just like, I don't know. She fell really far behind. But yeah, she powers through them. She's able to listen while she's working sometimes. So, you know, she'll catch up. It might take her a year to catch up or something. But on a long enough timeline, she'll get back to zero eventually. So.
Well, Amy of the future, allow me to say hello and thank you for keeping Ben in check.
Yes, indeed. Okay. Let's get into, there's one news item that I thought was worth discussing. We talk about news stuff all the time, right? But this one was, I don't know, it seemed to catch your attention in a big way. So I figured we could kick off today's episode by talking about that, and then we'll get into the water cooler and talk about what we've been doing and watching and all that stuff in a little bit. But what's the latest going on over at Warner Brothers Discovery when it comes to HBO?
Yeah, so look, I sometimes it's hard for me, like I'll get excited about something or find something interesting because I'm steeped in this stuff all the time. And I sort of forget that sometimes that stuff might not seem interesting to the average person on the surface. But this is one of those things that I felt like, this actually matters. And I feel like we should find a way to communicate that to people. So, look, here's the deal. HBO is a cornerstone of entertainment. There are few brands that have like such automatic quality associations with the name. That's important. So, you know, when HBO Max launched, that's why it was called HBO Max, because HBO was viewed as that strong brand. When Warner Brothers was purchased by Discovery and they made Warner Brothers Discovery as this new conglomerate, HBO kind of became this cornerstone of the whole thing. And that's been true. But, you know, even though they divorced the HBO name from HBO Max, and now it's just called Max. We'll get into that in a second. But this is important to understand when we go over what just happened. So what has happened is that, and this is from a report in Variety, is that HBO and Max content CEO Casey Bloys revealed that shows that were originally sort of billed as Max exclusives, such as the upcoming Harry Potter show, the Green Lantern show that's just called Lanterns, and the It prequel series, Welcome to Derry, we're talking about these really big shows, are now going to be HBO originals. So what that means is that they are going to air on HBO proper. They are going to go through all of the HBO channels, but then they will just stream on Max, sort of like House of the Dragon, sort of like The Last of Us. Now, to the average viewer, that might not mean a lot. It means they're still going to be able to watch it on Max and whatever. But, you know, sort of if you peel back the layers, I think this says a lot about what the future might entail and how important HBO is to the Warner Brothers Discovery landscape.
Okay, so yeah, walk me through the difference in their minds now between what an HBO branded show is going to be versus a Max branded show, because I read in that report that they mentioned that like The Penguin, the upcoming show starring Colin Farrell, is still going to be a Max original series because they've basically already gone through the process of licensing it out to international buyers and things like that. Like, they're basically too far down the line to apply this this new naming idea, this labeling system that they've concocted here to that show specifically. So The Penguin now, I believe, I think we can assume that, like, even if that runs multiple seasons, it's just going to be a Max original, like, from now until the end of time. So what is Casey Bloys saying the difference is between those two things now?
Yeah, so again, Penguin, I think, had it not already been so far along, would have almost certainly been, you know, labeled as an HBO thing. But again, like, you know, these deals get complicated. And he explained a little bit in the Variety piece that, you know, they originally felt the need to distinguish these two things and, you know, understandably so. And they felt like Warner Brothers IP was a good way to distinguish what, like, a Max show was. And then here's what he had to say. Said, as we started producing those shows, we were using the same methods, the same kind of thinking as how we would approach HBO shows. In a lot of cases, the same talent that has worked on those HBO shows. And then he goes on to say, what we ended up with is shows at this scope and scale that look great and great narratives and talent we've worked with. The idea of the delineation just kind of started to feel unnecessary. Like, why are we doing this? Let's just call them what they are, HBO shows. So that's where they ended up. And so I think that's where the delineation is going to be. But I think partially it's probably going to come down to budget. They touched on that in the Variety piece that, you know, if it's like $15 million or more an episode, it's probably going to be an HBO thing. You know, and then he had another pretty telling quote to me. I do think it is helpful to have a brand that doesn't put the expectations or the intention of an HBO show. If it's not designed to do that, it shouldn't have to. I like having that flexibility that you can experiment with things creativity, format-wise. So what he's saying is it's nice to have that Max profile to be able to put things. But to me, that almost is like, hey, if we're going to make some simple reality show, some lower budget, some streaming disposable show that goes to Max, your quality content goes to HBO. Like, he said that in the nicest way possible. And so, yeah, I think that's what this is. It's attempting to maintain the quality of HBO and also sort of cordon HBO off from this Max element of Warner Brothers Discovery a little more. That was why I speculated when they dropped HBO from the HBO Max title. That wasn't necessarily good for Max because it just confused branding for the streaming, but it was very good for HBO because it sort of distanced them from that thing. HBO shouldn't have to shoulder the weight of everything Warner Brothers Discovery is bringing down the pipeline. You know, that runs the risk of sort of diluting what HBO is.
Yeah.
This, I think, sort of increases the value of HBO. And I also think for these more expensive, bigger shows, you know, this worked very well for House of the Dragon. It worked very well for The Last of Us, having them air on HBO and stream on Max. It opens it up to a wider audience. People sort of underestimate how much that airing on HBO can sort of save it from, you know, just getting lost in the streaming landscape.
That's true.
So for me, I would argue that the big thing here is that the future is very uncertain. Not every streaming service is going to make it. David Zaslav has been extreme about cost-cutting measures. He might not believe that Max is totally the future if they can't, like, merge with Paramount or something. So maybe Max doesn't make it. Maybe they merge with another company. Who knows? Maybe Warner Brothers Discovery gets sold off for parts. In any of those scenarios, HBO is a cornerstone for the value of Warner Brothers Discovery, and they cannot risk letting that value decline. So to me, this all signals them trying to sort of like make sure HBO retains its integrity going forward. That's my big
thing. Yeah, I could see that. The only downside that I can see here is that by drawing such a clear line between, okay, moving forward, now if it gets the Max label, it's not as quote unquote important or interesting or expensive or whatever as what we, you know, that they basically, Casey Boyce is saying the HBO stuff is the stuff that we really care about. And anything that gets the Max label after this is going to be like a second class citizen, which is unfortunate when you look at something like Hacks, for example. Is like that's a Max original series. It's a terrific show. It's like won Emmys and it's like a fantastic show. That's another show that's going to just like if this this labeling is sort of drilled into audiences in a big way moving forward, like maybe a couple years from now, if somebody stumbles across the streaming service or subscribes for the first time or something like that, they're just going to write off everything that has the Max label as being lesser than, and that's not the case for Hacks. Like Hacks is a terrific show that absolutely would fall under these new parameters or whatever. So I don't know. I guess it's just a matter of the larger picture, like you're talking about, trying to prop up HBO and really like draw the square around it and say like, hey, this is an important asset that we have. But I worry that some things might sort of like fall by the wayside in the transition, but you know, we're in a messy period right now. So I guess that stuff is bound to happen. But.
Yeah. And that's the thing. It is messy. Casey Boyce did not acknowledge that in the interview. And like, you know, look, it's rationalizing the streaming era and coming to terms with a lot of this stuff and realizing that, you know, HBO must remain important and reckoning with whatever that, you know, means. And I think Hacks is a good example of something that under these new guidelines, you're right, would 100% be an HBO show and would probably benefit from being an HBO show. So I think that's what they're looking at is the benefit of future projects and what that could mean. So, yep. You know, I think you got to look at, I take this as like a net good probably, but also like, you know, because I think HBO is really important, sort of like it's one of those Pixar type things where what HBO has accomplished is incredible. And it, what, you know, it, we can't really afford to like lose that no matter what happens. Mm-hmm. And so I think that like this sort of helps to preserve HBO, I think. And that's why, you know, I'll take it as a net good, I guess.
Yeah, I'll be curious to see what this looks like in terms of execution and stuff moving forward. Like another worry that I have is they might start handing out some shows and things like that to, let's say, marginalized creators and just be like, oh, you guys get the Max shows, but we'll devote our real resources to HBO stuff. And like, that is a scenario that I can see happening that I wouldn't really want to happen to people. But I don't know, that's like a cynical read on what could happen here, but fingers crossed that doesn't end up coming to pass. So
I agree with you that that's a possibility, but yeah, I'm with you that I hope it's not the case.
Yeah. Speaking of, you mentioned the Harry Potter TV show. The news came out earlier today about some Succession veterans who have signed on as the showrunner and director of that series. You can read more about that at the link that I'll put in the show notes. We don't have time to really get into that today. But if you want to know that information and haven't stumbled across it elsewhere on the internet already, you can find it in our show notes. Okay, let's get into the water cooler, Ryan. What have you been doing recently?
Well, as of late, I've been sort of casually doing it for a bit, but now I'm under my strict program. So I am training for a full marathon. If any of you wonderful listeners who follows me on any of my social media probably knows I run a lot. I've done a couple half marathons and stuff. I never thought that I would do the full thing, but I did a 16 mile run, a couple of months ago. And at the end of that, I was like, for the first time, I was like, you know, I think I want to try this, even if it's only just once. And so, yeah, so now I'm like fully in the throes of training for a full marathon that I will run in September just before I turn 36. So whether or not I finish it, who knows? But that's kind of as of this week, it's really started to consume my life to the point where I've had to like tell friends and stuff like, hey, yeah, so for the next like several weeks, I will be, you know, somewhat unavailable because this, you know, Ben, the odd thing about running a long distance is that it takes a long time. So, you know, it is pretty time consuming and you gotta be careful with the diet and everything else. But, yeah, it's so that's like, that's pretty much like my life right now outside of work.
Yeah. I was wondering about, I've never run a marathon myself. The longest I've done is probably like a, I don't know, 5K, 10K, something like that. Maybe 10K is too long, actually. Anyway, I'm not sure. I've only run, whatever, a handful of miles. Certainly nothing approaching the level that you've gotten to already, let alone the level that you're going to when you actually, you're going to achieve when you actually run that marathon. What is the food situation like during a marathon? Do you just like strap a bunch of stuff to your chest and like eat it as you go? Or like, are there, I know there are probably like water stations along the way and stuff like that. How do you eat over the course of running a marathon?
Yeah, so this is what we would call like fueling during, and I've been watching my YouTube algorithms now just like lousy with just like running videos of like, you know, people that, you know, do this stuff. And so during like an average run, like let's say a training run, what I'll do is I almost turn my car into like a pit stop. And I have like a little cooler with like some of those running gels. And actually I found gummy bears to be very helpful. And some of these things like that. And, you know, you'll obviously eat a little something before. And then you have like electrolyte drinks, stuff like that. So what I found is during these half marathons is what you have is you have these aid stations all along the way. And yes, they have water and stuff, but a lot of them have like, again, these running gel, the little gel packet things people eat. Those have like electrolytes, salts, carbs, things like that. And then they'll have like, you know, some of them have like bananas and other things that. But yeah, the fueling is an incredibly important part. It's something I'm still getting used to because the problem over a full marathon is after about 20 miles, no matter what, your body just kind of runs out of reserves. So unless mm-hmm. you're fueling correctly, you will run out and hit the wall and may not be able to finish. So as you run, you have to continue to put stuff into your body every couple miles, every 30 minutes. However, you know, there's various methods, but yeah, you can't just let those reserves run out. So that's a process of learning for me right now. But yeah, it's very much the bigger problem I run into is that as you get further in, like your stomach just is a little raw and just like eating like heavy stuff, it just gets harder. So, you know, like you just got to go with what you can and it's tricky. But yeah, that is like a weird thing you have to consider when running 26.2 goddamn miles.
Yes. Well, congratulations on the effort. And I'm excited to see, you know, to watch you see this process through to the end, regardless of, you know, where you finish or any of that stuff, or if you finish running it or any of that. But I would love to for you to tell me about that, you know, as things are going along or definitely like at the very end after it's all over and done with. And
for sure,
reflect back on that experience. Okay, let's get into what we've been reading recently. I read a book called The October Country, which is written by Ray Bradbury. It came out in 1955, and it is a collection of 19 short stories that he wrote over several years. I think a lot of them were previously published in different magazines and stuff like that, and he ended up just collecting them and publishing them as a book in 1955. And as is often the case with any sort of anthology type of thing or like a short story collection, you know, it's very hit or miss in terms of the quality. Several of these, I can see why they would appear in a form like this because they just don't really seem that well constructed or that well thought through or whatever. But there are a couple of things that I really, really enjoyed here. There's one called, the Dwarf I really enjoyed. There's one called Skeleton that I liked a lot. I'm trying to think. Oh, my favorite one was one called The Emissary. So I don't know, maybe if people are just like Ray Bradbury fans but haven't read this book, you could, I would say, especially seek out The Emissary. That was my favorite one of all of them. You might be able to just find that short story solo floating around on the internet somewhere without having to wade through all the rest of these things, which I enjoyed to varying degrees. There's some that were just like real stinkers. I would say most of them were just fine. And then there were a few that really stood out to me. So anyway, a little bit of a hit or miss experience called The October Country, if you want to seek that out. And yeah, my favorite story is called The Emissary there. What have you been reading, Ryan?
I'm not a voracious reader, to my shame, but I, a little while ago, I backed on Kickstarter ages ago. Legendary did a, this Legends of the Monsterverse omnibus, which is a collection of all of the Godzilla and King Kong graphic novels that they've done since the Monsterverse started back in 2014. So it includes like Godzilla Awakening and other stuff like that. So it is a beautiful collection, and you can buy it on Amazon, but like the one that I got, because I did the Kickstarter, they have this incredible slip case that's like a file, you know, like, you know, a Property of Monarch slip cover thing. It's really cool. And but yeah, so I've been digging through some of those, and it's just like, if you're a huge like Godzilla and monster obsessive like I am, like it's really excellent, like in addition to storytelling. And it doesn't feel like super superfluous like sometimes these tie-in comics can. Like it feels like these stories have a reason to exist, and there's new characters, and the artwork's really good. So it's really been really nice digging into that, and it's just a gorgeous thing to have on the shelf too. So I've been really digging that.
Okay, so that's called Legends of the Monsterverse.
Legends of the Monsterverse. Like I said, you can pick it up on Amazon. You just won't be able to get the crazy slipcover thing that I got, but you can get all the books and stuff, which is cool. So
excellent.
And then I haven't finished it yet, but Jacob finally, our fearless leader, Jacob Hall, finally got me to start the Jack Reacher books. And I started with the first one, which is called Killing Floor, which is what the first season of the show is based on. And oh my God, are the Jack Reacher books my shit. They are just like, you know, pulpy, kind of ridiculous, like action movies, but in novel form. And I'm loving it so far. I'm about halfway through, and yeah, I will definitely be continuing on, because Jacob was talking about the new season of the show is based on what I believe he said is his favorite of the bunch, and what is largely the favorite amongst fans, and just his description of it got me so compelled, and I was like, hey, do I need to read the others to read that one? He's like, well, and then we kind of talked about it, so I started from the beginning, and just like, if you've watched the show or haven't, and I haven't watched the show yet either, but I know like I'm, you know, the millionth person in the world that's like, hey, have you read these Jack Reacher books? But man, are they fun. So I was just going to say,
are you reading it physically, or are you doing the audiobooks, or what's your process?
I will say most of the time, unless I'm talking about a comic book, almost always I mean an audiobook. Just because by nature of the way my life is structured, I just don't have that much free time. So like audiobooks allow me to get through books, where like if I'm at the gym, or if I'm, you know, running errands or whatever, it's kind of the way I get through books. And, you know, I wish I had a little more time and discipline to sit down and read an actual book, but it just, you know, it just doesn't really work out that way most of the time. So you know, it kind of allows me to get it done.
Awesome. Okay. So that first book is called The Killing Floor. Is that right?
Yes. Yes. It was published in like the late 90s, I think, or early 90s. But yeah, it's so fun. I'm like dying to get to the third one that Jacob's been bragging about. So ready for that.
Excellent. Okay. So let's get into what we've been, actually, before we get into what we've been watching, let's take a break and then we'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, so you've been watching a bunch of stuff, Ryan. Tell me about Land of Bad. I've seen a lot of people talk about this. Is this like a down and dirty action movie? What's the deal with this one?
Oh, Ben, I would love to tell you about Land of Bad. This first struck my radar when it cracked the top 10 at the box office earlier this year, kind of under the radar. And it's a low mid-budget action movie that stars Russell Crowe and Liam Hemsworth. And I just got curious about it. I was like, I don't know. Okay, that sounds interesting to me. And basically it involves this like special ops team that gets ambushed in enemy territory. And Liam Hemsworth kind of ends up as like the, you know, like kind of on his own. And meanwhile, Russell Crowe is this drone pilot who's kind of having to watch his back from afar. And it is kind of just this down and dirty like action flick, but it is so fun. Like I watched it on a plane, but they only put it out on DVD, which pissed me off. I really want a Blu-ray of this. Like it is and here's the deal, like, I no disrespect, Liam Hemsworth has ruined most movies I've ever seen him in. I think he's not a very good actor, and but he actually doesn't mess this up, like, and Russell Crowe is really good in it, actually, and like, and it's just, it's really fun, and even for like lower budget, like, the action's good, it looks good, it's intense, it doesn't really waste any time, it just gets right to it, and I had a really good time with it. And yeah, I just, if you've got an action bug up your ass, I think this does it.
So would you compare this to something like Den of Thieves, for example? Is it like kind of in that sort of like grungy, grimy?
It's definitely for the same people who liked Den of Thieves, but I think it's like a little, it's less silly than Den of Thieves. Like, Den of Thieves is fun, don't get me wrong, it's like Heat Light, but like, this is a little more like serious, and it actually sort of plays a little more seriously. Like, even though Russell Crowe is hamming it up a little bit at times, but not really in out of character ways, if that makes any sense. But like, mm-hmm. you know, cause like Gerard Butler in Den of Thieves is just a cartoon, and I love him for it. But like, it, you know, but yeah, this is a little more grounded, I think. But yeah, it is definitely, I think you could actually, that'd be a fun double feature now that I'm thinking about it. but yeah, it is sort of in that same vein. That's not a bad comparison.
Okay, so the movie is called Land of Bad. It sounds like it's available on DVD. You could probably get it
VOD, whatever. DVD. Yeah, VOD. It's available. I'm looking to rent. It's at that $6 price now, so you don't have to pay $20 for it.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Cool. All right, so you've also been catching up with the Critters franchise?
I have. I bought the box set a while back, because these were ones that were on cable all the time when I was growing up, but I didn't even have which movie was which straight in my head. I just knew that I liked them. So me and my fiance the other night were a little, we decided to put my cat down, and we were just both kind of like, eh, we don't want to have to focus on much of anything. So we threw on Critters 2, and oh my God. What a good time that was. And I got to say, the folks at Scream Factory, they take these movies that like shouldn't, like by no right should have like the 2K restoration, gorgeous release treatment, and they give them to them anyway. And it's just fantastic. And the Critters box set so far has been that to me. And yeah, if you just want some like silly down and dirty creature features, like the Critters movies so far have just been chef's kiss. Mick Garris directed this one. Just a damn good time.
I'm for some reason I'm blanking on Tremors is the name of the franchise. I've never seen a Critters movie. I've seen a few Tremors movies, but I've never seen any of the Critters. Would you recommend them? Like, I mean, it sounds like it sort of it met the needs of your moment in terms of like providing some goofy creature feature stuff. Do you think it's actually like a good movie or a good franchise, or what do you think about that?
Well, I think like the thing is, when you talk about horror and creature feature stuff, like specifically, like good takes on a loose term. And I don't mean that, like, I'm not trying to be funny, but like it, like these movies are not trying to punch above their weight class, right? Like, they're silly creature features. They're called Critters. Like, they acknowledge, like they acknowledge the ridiculousness of what they are. You know, mm-hmm. and like, so I think that, like, especially Critters 2, like, it embraces that fully. You know, so, yeah, like, I think they're totally worth watching. But again, it's like, if that sounds like your sort of thing, like if a hammy 80s practical effects driven creature feature that is not like The Thing, you know, it's the polar opposite of The Thing, right? Like, it's just like, it's right. You know, if that sounds fun to you, and some of the Tremors sequels are not bad comparisons here, of like that sort of tone, maybe a little bit,
yeah,
but like with a little bit more like overt sci-fi in it. Yeah, no, so that's actually not a bad, that's not a bad comparison, I would say. So I can't like recommend them blanketly, but if that sounds like your thing, for sure.
Okay, cool. So that's Critters 2. And then what else have you been watching, Ryan?
I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I recently, the other day, I got just needed something on in the background, and I threw on 2007's Transformers with the Michael Bay commentary track, which I had never done, and oh man, what a good time that was. Michael Bay just like doesn't hold back in those commentary tracks, just says what he's thinking, and it provides a lot of interesting insight into the man that has made some of the wildest movies ever. So I don't know, it's a good time. If you like Transformers at all, I would say that. And then, you know, just real quick, I rewatched Castaway, and that Robert Zemeckis sure knows how to make a picture when he hits it out of the park. And I'm also, for the first time ever, watching the Dirty Harry movies. Have you watched the Dirty Harry films, Ben?
I have. It's been a long time, but I've seen all of them, yes.
Oh my God, are these movies for me? Me and my best friend back in Arizona, we tend to go through these franchises slowly, and I'm through the first two, and like, oh my God, like just so, they're just so like of their time, gritty, just like grindhousey, filthy cop movies, and I love every second of them. And yeah, I'm very excited for what comes next. I don't know if the other three are as good as the first two, but if you like Clint Eastwood and you're in the mood for like a dirty cop shoot 'em up, and you've never gone around to those, big recommend from this guy.
Do you know any of the actors who pop up in the later movies?
Not really, no. I'm kind of going into this blind. I'm guessing I'm in for some surprises.
You're definitely in for a surprise. I want to say it's the third movie. It's been so long since I've seen
it. Okay, because that's what I've got coming up next. I think tonight, actually. I think I'm watching it tonight with my buddy. So okay.
The order wrong. But yeah, there's one person that you will absolutely know when you see him where you're like, what the hell? He was in a Dirty Harry movie?
Okay. I am so excited. All right, hell yeah.
And then the last thing you have written down here is Godzilla Raids Again. What is that? I've never even heard of that.
Oh yeah, I just didn't want to drone on too much. But so Godzilla Raids Again is the second Godzilla movie. It was the sequel to the original Godzilla. I got the Criterion set a little while ago, that big, amazing Criterion box set. And I've just been kind of slowly working through them a little out of order. And I've seen most of these, you know, growing up and stuff, because I watched them endlessly when, you know, either renting them from the video store or on cable. But this is one I didn't think I had ever seen. And that original Godzilla is still so compelling. Mm-hmm. And this is a pretty big downgrade, I hate to say. It's not without its charms, but it definitely felt like it didn't quite know, like, you didn't quite know how to make it a franchise yet without, like, you know, because that first one was such a singular thing, and they eventually transitioned into more successful entries. But yeah, this is a weird movie, sort of. It kind of has to serve as a bridge between like that original Godzilla and what came later. And yeah, it's not great, but I will say that Criterion, even with these not great movies in that set, did a phenomenal job of like making sure they look and sound good and putting them together, which still makes them a treat to watch. And like, as I've joked with people in our Slash Film Slack, is that every Godzilla movie is good by virtue of the fact that it is a Godzilla movie. So I will still say that holds true here.
Excellent. Okay, so that's Godzilla Raids Again. Man, what a title for the second movie. Like, just, they're just coming out of the gate hot with those.
Yeah, they're just like, hey, he's back. You know, pretty much. It is kind of that too. It really is that sort of thing.
Okay, so I watched a movie called Touch that is actually coming to theaters pretty soon, July 12th. Baltasar Kormáker, I think is how you pronounce the director's name. He is a director who is known for action movies like Contraband, starring Mark Wahlberg, and things like Two Guns, and he made a movie called Everest back in 2015. He surprisingly has made one of the most tender romances of the year. This is a movie that's called Touch, and it's about an old man who, in the wake of his wife's death, goes out in search of his first love, who he has not seen in more than 50 years. And along the way, we see flashes of his memories of how the two of them met, and we get to see their love affair blossom and ultimately learn what happened and why they didn't stay together back in the day. It's just a really lovely little movie, and it comes to theaters on July 12th. So I just wanted to put it on people's radar. I was like totally kind of blown away that the same guy who made, you know, stuff that the kind of mid-budget action movies that he makes are fine and like entertaining to me, but not like, I don't consider them to be, you know, some of my favorite things in the genre or whatever. Like, I'm glad that they exist. I'm glad he's there making movies like that. I'm glad people have those movies to see, but they've never really been outstanding to me. But this is like, it reminds me of the shift in tone that Craig Mazin did when he went from being, in my mind, the guy who wrote like, you know, superhero movie and like those sort of Friedberg Seltzer parody type of films to writing and working on, like, serving as a showrunner on HBO's Chernobyl, which is just like one of the best shows I've ever seen, period. Like, oh my God, I didn't realize you had this in you. That's the same kind of way that I felt about Baltasar Kormák with this movie Touch. So
I will say I'm a big, did you see Everest? I like Everest quite a bit. The
yeah, Everest was pretty good. It was like, you know, just this nice little like ensemble thriller. There were a few little like tropes of like the wife on the phone, you know, far away being like, are you coming home soon? You know, like
that, type of stuff. I'll give you that, a little melodramatic, but I got to tell you, I saw the trailer for this and this looks like it would devastate me. And I just felt like I couldn't bring myself to see it, but is it like a, I don't know. I couldn't quite tell if it's like a depressing movie or like, is it like,
it gets into some serious stuff. Like some things that most mainstream Hollywood movies do not really, some subject matter that most mainstream Hollywood movies don't really touch on. I would say it's not necessarily like the most depressing movie you'll ever see, but it's not like a light, frothy, fun. It's not a rom-com, certainly. It's a decades spanning romance. But yeah, there are some heart-wrenching moments in this thing, but I thought it was really well done. So anyway, if you're in the market for something like that, seek out Touch when it hits theaters on July 12th. I also caught up with Hannah Einbinder's Everything Must Go, which is a comedy special that's streaming on Max right now. The only thing I had ever seen her in was the aforementioned Max original series Hacks. And I think she has grown into such a talented actor who can really hold her own opposite from Jean Smart, who is just like a legend in the field. And Everything Must Go is Hannah Einbinder's first stand-up special. And I laughed out loud a lot at this. And that's, I mean, pretty much as ringing an endorsement as you could get for a comedy special. So I'm not going to try to repeat any of her bits or highlight moments that I loved or anything. I would just say, if you like Hacks, seek this out. If you've never seen Hacks, maybe use this as like a launch pad to get you interested in her. And then you can check out the show later, because I would highly recommend both. So that's called Hannah Einbinder, Everything Must Go. Let's see, a couple more things I wanted to mention real quick. I'm continuing my journey through the Thin Man movies, and I've gotten to the fifth film called The Thin Man Goes Home. This one came out in 1944.
I'm showing my ignorance here. I did not realize The Thin Man was a franchise.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So the first one came out in, I think, 34.
And yeah, I'm familiar with that, of course, but
yeah, that one's great. I've talked about it a bunch on the show. It's like one of my favorite movies from the mid-30s. And William Powell and Myrna Loy play Nick and Nora Charles, he's like a former detective and she's like a rich, his rich wife. And they just basically like booze their way through solving mysteries and stuff together. So it's just a really, really enjoyable formula. I would say this fifth movie, there's six total. I would say this fifth one is not as bad as the fourth, which I thought was the worst one so far, but it's not necessarily great either. This one is about Nick and Nora going to visit Nick's parents, and we learn that Nick has always been desperate for his father's approval, and then a murder happens in the small town where his parents live, and Nick has to solve it to impress his dad. And, you know, there are a few little moments and exchanges in it that really put a smile on my face, as usual with these actors. But for the most part, I would say this is pretty skippable unless you're like a hardcore completionist on the Thin Man franchise. So that is The Thin Man Goes Home. And then lastly, I watched the movie Cold Mountain for the first time. I mentioned this on an earlier episode of the podcast earlier this week. Have you ever seen this, Ryan? It came out in 2003.
I never got around to it. It's one of those, because that was actually around the time I got super into like movies in general, and I remember like starting to like obsess over the Oscars and stuff like that around that time, and I remember it coming out, and I mean, I was even into like stuff like Good Night and Good Luck and movies that like, you know, a person that age probably wouldn't be into. So yeah. I remember Cold Mountain like getting on my radar, but I just couldn't bring myself, because my mom would rent movies from, you know, at that time it was Hollywood Video all the time, and I just couldn't, like, nothing about it ever gripped me. And then, you know, I remember every once in a while I've thought about it and I'm like, I see the runtime and I'm like, just forget it. You know? Yeah. And I just haven't gotten around to it.
It is a little long, but it is a terrific movie. I was in the same boat where I just like skipped it at the time and just never made time to catch back up with it. But my wife recommended it. She saw it at the time and she was like, yeah, I think you would like it. And she was absolutely right. I think there should be 10 movies like this every year. It is a wonderful, yearning romance between Jude Law and Nicole Kidman that's set during the Civil War. And it has an absolutely dynamite Renee Zellweger performance in it. And I was just like blown away by how much I loved her in this movie. And that's not something I can say about a lot of Renee Zellweger performances that I've seen. I was looking back through her IMDb and like, I actually haven't seen a ton of her movies, but even the ones that people seem to love across the board, like Jerry Maguire, for example, I'm not like a huge fan of. So I've never really understood her as a star, but seeing her in this, I was like, holy crap, why are people not writing great roles for her like this in everything? So anyway, she's like unreal in this movie. Really, really great. And the biggest thing, the biggest surprise to me about Cold Mountain is it literally has one of the most stacked casts I've ever seen in any movie, Ryan. Like I think you should watch it just for that alone.
Like, well, you got what, Donald Sutherland's in it, Philip Seymour Hoffman's in it, Natalie Portman's in it. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, so yeah, you know those three, and you know Jude Law and Nicole Kidman and Renee Zellweger. I mean, just that collection alone is very impressive. I'm not going to ruin the rest of the people who pop up in this, but it felt like every 10 minutes there was somebody new. And the best part is I had no idea that any of them were actually in this movie. Like, I only knew Jude Law and Nicole Kidman, I think. So I felt like Lucille Bluth seeing Jean Parmesan in Arrested Development or something every time a new person would come on the screen. So anyway, Cold Mountain, incredible stuff. Great movie. Loved it. Big stamp of approval. Check that out. It's streaming on Prime Video right now.
Did you ever watch Cinderella Man?
I've never seen that one. Nope.
Okay, so look, I'm sure this is one of those ones. There's a running joke about me at Slash Film where I'll like pop in and just be like, in the Slack and be like, oh, I like that movie. And then I just assume I'm in safe territory and then everybody piles on me for hating it. Like, they're just like, that movie sucks. What are you talking about? But I get the feeling Cinderella Man would be one of those movies, but I am a gigantic fan of Cinderella Man. I love boxing movies. And I only bring that up because Renee Zellweger is in that. And she's a supporting, great, great supporting performance, I think. So okay, if you're feeling like I would like to see more good Renee Zellweger, big, big fan of Cinderella Man. So I'd say check that out. But
okay, yeah, I've heard Giamatti is pretty good in that too.
Giamatti's phenomenal in that movie. Giamatti's phenomenal, like just outstanding. Yeah,
and that one has not really been on my radar, I'll admit. But now I think you've gotten me to actually write it down my list. So who knows when I'll actually get around to watching it? But at least it's on the list now, Ryan. So that's good.
I can say this too. It's like an easy watch. Like once you throw it, it's not like. Oh God, I'm trying to think, because you know, like the Rocky movies are like an easy watch. It's sort of more like that, less like Raging Bull, you know,
Million Dollar Baby or something like
that. Yeah, yeah, that's what I was trying to think. It was Million Dollar Baby, but like, yeah, Million Dollar Baby and Raging Bull, where you're just like, you know, you're just like, ugh, you know, just yeah, like,
you feel like you've been pummeled in some
yeah,
way.
And like, I love Raging Bull, but like, yeah, it's, but yeah, this is like a inspirational, nice watch. So, you know, if that encourages you at all.
All right, so last thing here, the what we've been playing section. You've been playing a Star Wars video game, right?
I have. This was supposed to come out years ago, and I only bring this up because I've written about it several times for different outlets, no less. But Star Wars Outlaws came out, and what this is, it is a online multiplayer game. So this was originally supposed to come out, I think, in early 2022. Not Star Wars Outlaws. Oh, my God. That is the upcoming big open world game. I'm sorry, Star Wars Hunters is the game that I'm
okay. Oh, I was going to say, you got an early version of Outlaws? That seemed, I saw the trailer for that the other day, and it looks incredible.
We talked about that. I'm so sorry. There's too much Star Wars stuff. Okay, so Star Wars Hunters. I'm so sorry, everybody. But yeah, this was supposed to come out in like 2022, it finally came out for the Switch and like mobile, so you can play it on like tablet, I think, or whatever. But it's... I recently have talked about how I have no time for video games, and I was like, I miss it, and I wish I did. And someone was like, you know, this is like a low investment game. So I open it up, and what's great about it is it's like literally like 5-minute matches. So you play, and it's just like you just pick a character, and it's like the controls are incredibly easy to pick up. And there's only like a couple of different game types. You know, it's either just straight up shoot 'em up or like base capture stuff. And it's a really good time. And again, it's like, even if you only have like 15 minutes, you can get like 3 matches in. It's great. And it's super fun. And it's, you know, it's like, I don't know. It really was like, oh, this is perfect. And like, I think for people that maybe feel like they don't either have time for games or they're like a little exhausted with like how, you know, like expansive games can be sometimes, like this is actually a really nice little just like throw it in. It's a fun, it play like a big Wookiee or like random bounty hunters or like a beefed up stormtrooper. It's like a little silly, but it's really fun. And yeah, I think it's just low investment. It's free to download. So there's no, you know, it's like you're not paying for it even. It's free. So yeah, it's great. I've just truly been, as someone who's a little bit like, I don't have time for video games. I'm a little exhausted with some of the Star Wars stuff. This really was like a nice surprise. It's kind of like the original Star Wars Battlefront, but like a light version of it, which I think is like a good sort of way to describe it. But yeah, that's, I would say check it out.
Okay, so that's Star Wars Hunters. It sounds like it was good bang for your buck, and your buck being free. So
your buck being free, nice. Unless you want to pay for like cosmetics and stuff.
Yeah, man, I can't wait until Star Wars Outlaws come out.
Oh,
I
think Star Wars Outlaws looks incredible.
That's supposed to be later this year, right?
I think it's isn't it next year? Early next year.
Oh, is it? Okay. Anyway,
yeah, there's a couple of games that like I need to stay alive for. It's Star Wars Outlaws, the Jurassic Park Survivor, and then the most important is a Squirrel with a Gun, which is the game where you play as a squirrel with a gun. And that comes out in August, I think. So.
Fantastic. All right. I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find more about almost everything that we talked about at slashfilm.com. I will link to a few things in the show notes as well. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That truly helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about this show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all tomorrow.